Happy holidays, you filthy animals, and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. We hope you all had an amazing Christmas. If you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. If you don't, we hope you had a wonderful day off work. This week, we're going to be reviewing the end of the DCEU in Aquaman 2, The Lost Kingdom. But before we do that, of course, we have to talk about the box office. Now, gentlemen, Merry Christmas. It's good to see you both. I'm going to be covering two different sets of box office. And the reason I'm doing this, folks, is because there is a weekend box office, a Friday, Saturday, Sunday take. And then there were multiple movies that were released on Christmas. So I'm going to be reviewing the weekend box office, and I'll be reviewing the Christmas box office. So first, let's hear the numbers for the weekend box office. Benny won our bet in that Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom came in first place with $27.7 million over this three-day weekend, not counting Christmas, folks. Coming in at number two was Wonka with $18.5 million. That's a good solid week, too, for that movie. Three is the new Universal animated movie Migration with $12.4 million. Coming in at number four is Anyone But You with $6 million. Coming in at number five, Salar Part 1 Ceasefire with $5.4 million. Another Bollywood movie hitting the U.S. theaters and doing well. Number six, Iron Claw, the A24 movie starring everybody's hunky crush, Zac Efron. Number seven, The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, coming in at number seven with $3 million. Number eight, The Boy and the Heron with another $2.7 million. Number nine, Godzilla Minus One with another $2.6 million. $40 million domestic for that movie. And number 10 is Donkey, another Bollywood film, cracking the top tens with $4.6 million. Now, the Christmas box office looks a little different. We had some new releases come out on Christmas, and it was an interesting box office haul. Now, there is a lot of people that go to the movies on Christmas. My nephews make it a tradition. They all left early on Monday from the Haas household to go with their other set of grandparents to the movies. They do that every year. This year, they saw Migration. I don't know if that was the target audience for them, but actually, they enjoyed it. But the box office for Christmas Day, The Color Purple, with its wide release, debuted at number one with $18.1 million, knocking out Aquaman, which came in number two with $10.6 million. Wonka had $10.3 million for third place. Another new release, The Boys in the Boat, came in fourth place with 5.7. Migration was fifth with 5.3 million. Another new release, the Michael Mann directed Ferrari, came in sixth place with 2.8. Coming in at number seven was Anyone But You. Coming in at number eight with 1.9 million was The Iron Claw. Number nine, The Hunger Games was The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. And number 10, Salar. Gentlemen, I covered a lot, but I felt it was necessary to cover all of this because there were new releases that came out and did really, really well on day one. So I gave you the numbers. You heard the tale. JT, what does it tell you?
Yeah, I was actually writing these down as you're going over everything because I just want to lose track. How much did Hunger Games make? I didn't hear how much you said it made.
So Hunger Games over the weekend made $3 million. And then Hunger Games on Christmas made $980,000.
So what was number seven for the holiday Christmas?
For Christmas, number seven was Anyone But You.
Anyone. And how much did that make?
$2 million.
Two. I'm a little shocked about Anyone But You not doing great over this holiday season because I feel like maybe on social media there's a lot of hype for that movie. I think Sydney Sweeney was doing a lot of, I mean, she's really popular right now. And they were doing a lot of press, a lot of stuff on YouTube. Like, they were just really, I feel like, hitting the campaign trail pretty hard. And I remember just, I felt like there was a lot of excitement, at least here in Hollywood, about that movie. And it just, it kind of did so-so numbers, not great. Color Purple, I'm pretty surprised by also. It's a musical. I think musicals are a little bit harder to sell to the mainstream. I mean, I guess that's not true. I mean, freaking, how much was that Hugh Jackman movie make? It made like $200 million.
Look at Wonka. Wonka's kicking ass. Like, yeah, a good musical can go a long way.
I still haven't seen Wonka. How much of that movie is a musical? Is it like a pure musical, or is it like a little bit here and there?
It's a musical.
It's a straight up musical. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Wonka makes a lot of sense for me because it's the holidays. Color Purple, I mean, the Spielberg film is, you know, really well done. I just didn't know how much of a audience there was for this movie, for a remake. But it appears it did pretty well. Aquaman, listen, no one's shocked by the numbers here. I will say I think I had a little more hope for how well it would do because of the first movie being a $1 billion franchise. Once Captain Marvel came out, it pretty much showed me that doesn't mean crap these days, because Captain Marvel did horrible, and that was a $1 billion movie also. And it's the end of the DCEU, which is, you know, kind of sad if you like the DCEU. And I'm disappointed because I just love him all as Aquaman. I thought that was such great casting by Zack Snyder. And every time he showed up in a movie before his own movie, he was like a highlight. I was like, who is that? I want more of this guy. And I really liked him in the Justice League movie. And I know not everyone's a big fan, but I really dug that first Aquaman movie a lot. But I don't think, you know, Warner Brothers is crying into their, you know, pillow at night because they're not making a lot of money. Because I think this is just the final nail in the coffin. They're just waiting to get this off their schedule. They didn't even get a premiere. I don't know if you saw online, like, they didn't even hold a Hollywood premiere for this movie. It was like in a theater in LA, and like a couple people showed up. James Wan Momoa was there. It looks like they spent more on craft services during this movie than they did on the premiere. It wasn't even a premiere. I can't even call that. It was a screening that they had them show up. So they just dumped this thing and couldn't wait to get rid of it. And you know what? At the end of the day, I'm just sad because the DCU was very different than Marvel. And I enjoyed having that different tone that Zack Snyder brought to it. The more serious, kind of adult themed in a lot of ways. And I'm sad to see Aquaman go out in such a whimper. Now, at least Warner Brothers is like, we're done. That DCU's over. We don't care how much it makes. Captain Marvel, on their hand, is part of a full-throttle MCU. So I'm sure Marvel's worrying a little bit more about what's going on there. So that's what I take away from this. Nothing else here really sticks out to me, honestly.
And how about you, Benny? What's tell you, buddy?
Well, I don't think that the results are odd. A lot of the movies that did well, like when you talk about like Me Without You or what have you, the movies that were strong are movies that either skewed older or skewed towards families. And a lot of times I think that's who's going out on Christmas weekend. I don't think your typical movie going audience actually, you know, that's in sort of that middle age range from in like their mid 20s. I don't think there's a lot of date night activity over the Christmas week. I think who's going out that week is families and older adults whose like kids are out of the home. I think that's who goes to movies on Christmas. The Color Purple, I am surprised it did as well as it did in some regards, because the original Color Purple, if you're not familiar with the first movie, doesn't seem like it would lend itself really well to an upbeat musical number. And so that's one of the reasons I have I've not had really a lot of interest in seeing it, because the old Spielberg movie is in my head. And I was like, that movie would just be so messed up if someone broke out in song during it. At least that's kind of the way I felt about it. But I think a lot of it is, you know, I think Oprah has a mass audience still and has a lot of pull. And she was doing a lot of marketing and pushing for that movie. And I think that, you know, that's not something that's going to show up generally. I think, you know, in most movie nerd circles or, you know, like young people circles or, you know, the Twitterverse, the people that are still following Oprah avidly. But I still think she has an avid following that'll get people out to the theaters. And Aquaman, I think I was pretty close to the number that I guessed it would get this weekend, and that's kind of what I thought it would do. So it's not a surprise, and I think it will sink like a stone this coming week. DC had given up on it. They didn't put anything. I think it's a testament to Jason Momoa and Patrick Wilson's charisma that it made what it did, because I think DCU wanted it to go out with no one noticing. I think they're done with the DCEU bleeding into whatever James Gunn is going to do. I actually think they avidly wanted people not to see this. And so I think the $40 million is solely due to that. Other than that, like there's always like the little Oscar movies that come up with like $3 to $4 million a week starting this time of year. So I don't think there's any great surprises. I'm surprised that Migration did as well as it did, because there was like no marketing for this movie at all. I'm someone that goes to the movies every week for this, and then I watch a lot of streaming movies, and I've seen one commercial for Migration, one, and I go to the movies every week.
I've actually heard pretty good things about Migration. And again, like, if you're going to get my nephew saying something good about it, then it has to be funny enough and adult enough for them to enjoy it. So I'm curious. I would check out Migration. The Color Purple doesn't strike me odd that it did so well on Christmas. I actually think musicals do quite well in theaters. I actually think that there's a huge audience for musicals. Wonka proved that. Like, we've had several movies this year that have proven like that musicals aren't just a niche. And The Color Purple is kind of a classic movie. And I've heard amazing things about the performances from The Color Purple. Fantasia Barbarino, she's in the movie. She's the lead. Halle Berry from The Little Mermaid, she's the other lead. And then you have Taraji P. Henson. Like, it's intriguing enough where I actually want to go see it. I think my wife and I will probably see it this weekend. Aquaman's returns. Listen, Aquaman's, the money that they made are the people who are genuinely interested in seeing this movie. People will not go revisit this movie again in theaters. Whatever movie or whatever money this movie continues to make are the families that did not go out on Christmas, or the people who did not go out on Christmas weekend. It will sink like a stone. I 100% agree with you guys on that. Warner Brothers can't drop the DCEU quicker. And it's sad enough because to JT's point, like this, and we'll talk a little bit more about it in the third segment, but the DCEU started really strong and it was very different from Marvel. But then I think there was a lot of studio interference that was probably pushing all of these directors to be more like Marvel. And I'll talk about that a little bit more, but at the same time, the way the DCU ended was with this turd of a movie called Aquaman 2, and it's not surprising it didn't do very well. Hey, you won the Christmas weekend, you didn't win Christmas. The Color Purple beat out a tentpole superhero movie, but we've been seeing that all year long. So superhero fatigue is a thing. I think a lot of people just don't give a shit now that the DCU is officially ended. I think James Gunn has a couple of years to be able to reboot it. I don't know if that's the right hands for the DC studio is James Gunn. I really didn't care for The Suicide Squad. James Gunn likes a lot of very obscure comic book characters in his movies. And I think if you're going to be rebooting something like the DC, I don't know if you need to bring out these crazy obscure characters that nobody knows. I think you need to stick with the winner. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how it all turns out, but the weekend box office, the biggest surprise to me is Bollywood continuing to do well in U.S. theaters. We're seeing it. These international movies are finding audiences in the United States. Look at Godzilla 1. Godzilla 1 in 4 weeks has made $40 million. And we, the three of us, absolutely adored that movie. If you look at last year, the movie RRR, that was a huge phenomenon in the United States. And so I actually find it extremely interesting that like the Bollywood movies are, and these outside of the US domestic movies are finding its audiences. Look at the movie like Parasite. I loved that movie. That movie was such a weird, twisted, look into Korean society just from all kinds of different lenses. And then the movie ends up winning the Best Picture Award. It absolutely deserved to win it, in my opinion, Bong Joon-ho, the director. But I am glad to see that international movies are finding a market and finding success in the United States, because some of these movies are so much fun. RRR was one of my favorite movies of last year. That was such a wild, fun blast. So kudos to Bollywood. You're turning out some good stuff. Kudos to the international market. Keep them coming. We love it. Give us more of the Godzilla Minus Ones. Gentlemen, before we move on to our next segment, I did need to bring this up because our very own Benny Hamlin went and saw Poor Things. Now, well, let me rephrase that. You didn't go out to see this movie, but you saw this movie. Now, JT gave us his review of this a couple of weeks ago. So, Benny, I'd like to get your takes on Poor Things.
So, I will tell you exactly what I texted Moose and JTE upon finishing Poor Things. And that it's, JTE, you bastard, I can't believe you talked me into seeing this movie. This movie would have to climb Mount Everest to reach the heights of dog shit. This movie is horrible. Awful. Unwatchable. The worst movie I have seen this year. The worst movie I have seen since Nomadland, which is one of the worst movies of the decade, in my opinion. Like, listen, you have to know yourself as a movie fan. Like, I'm not someone that generally enjoys indie cinema. And generally speaking, about 7 out of 10 movies that are nominated for Best Picture, I personally don't like. So, like, I know who I am as a movie fan. Like, I don't like experimental cinema. I don't like indie cinema. Like, I will watch them because sometimes you never know. Sometimes things randomly hit. This movie wasn't made for me. This movie was definitely not made for me. But this is just a really lousy take on Frankenstein that's like bastardized to focus on generally like gender philosophy, socioeconomic philosophy. And if you dig that, that's fine. You will love it. You know, like if that's something that you look for in movies, you will like this movie. The performances are good, but that's all that's good in this movie. Like, Emma Stone is.
What about the set design? I mean, I think the movie production-wise is like beautifully shot. He creates almost like a Tim Burton-esque world. Did you at least like respect the?
It looks like Wes Anderson's people had the weekend off and did a rush job. That's exactly what it looked like. The set design sucked. The character design sucked. The cinematography sucked. The score is one of the worst scores I've ever heard on a wide-released movie. Everything about this movie is awful, except the performances.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I just think if you look at the movie, I don't know how you could say the production was value and costume design, set design. I just don't know. Even if you don't like it, I just don't know how you could deny the craftsmanship that is going in there. I think it's the director's vision from beginning to end. I think, are you a fan of his previous films? Have you seen any of his previous films?
I've seen The Favorite. Okay. Like okay. I said, this movie.
That's his most mainstream. Yeah. That's his, like, everything before that is crazy. So have you seen any of his crazy stuff, like The Lobster? I have not. Okay.
But like I said, this movie is definitely not made for me. I'm not trying to dissuade 100%. You from seeing it. Yeah, like, yeah. If you're someone that goes out and you see, like, the Best Picture winners and you were, like, high-fiving your friends, talking about the performances in Tar and women talking, this movie will be up your alley. Like, you'll dig it, you know? Like, it will hit for you. I'm just saying, like, if you are someone that goes to the movies because you want, like, mindless entertainment, you just want to have fun, enjoy yourself, turn off your mind, this ain't the film for you at all.
I'll push back a little bit on that only because I think the way that she is like a woman baby, it makes for some very comical, situational, like the things she says, she's unfiltered. She doesn't understand society's rules. It does come. There are moments in the movie where even if you don't like the style and you're not into the story, it is comical at times, just the way she behaves. And especially with the way Mark Ruffalo plays off her in the movie. I think there's humor to be had there, even if you don't like the movie or the style, because of the absurdity of it. It's kind of like Encino Man with Brendan Fraser, the great thespian Pauly Shore, and Sean Astin, the true, you know, hero of Lord of the Rings. The way they unfreeze that, you know, caveman, and he's kind of like going through society but doesn't know how to act like a regular human. I saw shades of that in this movie with this Frankenstein girl who basically has the mind of a baby in a woman's body. I bet you didn't expect to hear Encino Man compared to Poor Things today. No, that's the kind of quality we bring you on this podcast.
I agree with you. Both films have two Academy Award winners and are god-awful movies, so that is a very apt comparison.
Wow. Encino Man, slander. How dare you, sir? From somebody from the 80s and 90s who loves comedy, I can't believe you would... disappointed is not even the beginning of what I'm feeling right now.
This is what I'll say with this. As far as the humor goes, there are a couple chuckles, you know?
Are we talking about Encino Man or Poor Things?
It could be either, really. it applies to both. So, like, there are a few chuckles to be had, but a lot of times, like, I guess one of the problems I have with Poor Things is I really don't care, like, the sexual content does not bother me. Like, I'm not someone that makes uncomfortable or anything like that. But a lot of times I felt like the movie didn't have a lot going on for it, story-wise or anything-wise. So it would default to sex scenes and shock value to try to re-engage you when it just didn't have anything else to offer. And so I felt like I would watch for 5 minutes. They would give you like a sex scene or something that they thought would like jar you to try to re-engage you. And to me, that's not storytelling. Anybody could do that. Like just an S&M porn film can do that. That's not storytelling. It's just cheap. And like I said, it doesn't bother me. You know, if it serves the story, I'm all for it. But in this time, it didn't have a story other than just a bastardized version of Frankenstein that it didn't even tell that well. And so, like
I said, I would argue the story obviously doesn't have like a beginning, middle, and end. It kind of reminded me in some ways of Forrest Gump, the Best Picture winning film, where you just see Forrest Gump go on these adventures through time and history, and it's nothing really keeps it together. Like it's really just these random, almost like silhouettes of just little stories. Like he's in Vietnam, now he's in ping pong, now he's doing a shrimp boat, now he's running across America. It kind of does that with Emma Stone in this movie. She just goes from set piece to different part of the world to different kind of career. And it's kind of that kind of flow. It's more about the character journey than it is telling a story. So I think that's what you would have to know going in. Don't expect like, ooh, a beginning, middle, and end. It's more of a character journey. And like you said, there is a lot of sex. There is a lot of shock value in there. I was definitely in theater like, holy crap. Like, but it's done in such a tongue-in-cheek and fun way that it just matched the tone of the film. But I can't wait for our boy Moose here to see it. Because here's the thing. I didn't love the movie. I liked it, and I respected it, and but I didn't love it. But I definitely think it has some of the best performances. I think Ruffalo's a shoo-in. I think Emma Stone is. Emma Stone might be my favorite performance of the year. Even if I didn't love the movie, I think she might get the best performance of the year. I don't even know who else I would give it to right now over her, to be honest with you. But I still need to see a couple films. Like, May, December, I hear is really good. And I hear Julia Moore is really good in that. And I need to see Anatomy of a Fall, which I hear the lead in that is, like, amazing. So, but as of right now, Emma Stone is probably the front leader for my best actress.
Yeah, I can't comment on the Oscars. I don't really care about the Oscars, to be perfectly honest with you. I would say the performances are fine. I think William Dafoe's performance is actually the best in the movie. I thought his performance in the movie was really good. And he's the one character in the movie that I thought was interesting. I was like, you know, an hour of this bizarre guy and his bizarre trauma would be fascinating to me. Emma Stone, like her entire character arc is masturbating in a house, having sex with someone on a boat, having sex with someone in a hotel, having sex with someone in the brothel, going back home.
You sold me about three sexes ago.
I'll say this, like I said, if you like indie cinema, if you like sort of experimental movies, the performances are good. You will like this movie. If you are someone like me that's not that cup of tea, you will hate this movie. And if you are someone that is going into this movie strictly for the sex scenes, save yourself the $8. It's free on the internet.
Fair enough, folks. Always giving you listeners some good tips. Remember, sex is free on the internet.
Yes, and I will say this. I will give the movie this. It is the best use of corpse movie outside of the Paw Patrol this entire year. Like, when you're talking corpse penis, it beats every single movie.
All right, folks, stick around. We're going to take a quick break given that. Up next, we've already done our DCEU rankings, so we're not going to talk more DCU in the next segment. But what we did find a little inspiration with is, I think we can all agree that whether you liked Aquaman 2 or not, the chemistry between Patrick Wilson and Jason Momoa was very palpable. That being said, we're going to discuss our favorite brother team-ups in this next segment. Stay tuned.
I have a surprise for you. Get in.
Poor Things is unlike anything you've seen.
A woman plotting her course to freedom.
I'm not old.
It's hysterically funny.
Oh.
An incredible cinematic experience you won't soon forget.
There is a world to enjoy, traverse, circumnavigate.
It's the best film of the year.
We more.
One's enough, and more's too much.
Poor Things, rated R.
Unlike anything you've ever seen.
No!
Anywhere you've ever been. You have a bad day here. Somebody dies. From director Ron Howard, Kurt Russell, William Baldwin, Scott Glenn, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Rebecca De Mornay, Donald Sutherland, and Robert De Niro. Backdraft, rated R. Special sneak preview Saturday night.
Welcome back, folks. It is always good to hear from our sponsor. And now for our favorite segment, your extra movie butter boys, a little bit of our own favorites. Now, Jason Momoa and Patrick Wilson play brothers. Believe it or not, Momoa is supposed to be the older brother to Patrick Wilson, but I'll talk about that in the third segment. But you cannot deny that the chemistry between those two was a lot of fun in Aquaman 2. While the movie... You can have your own opinion. I'll give my opinion next. I did not like that movie that much, but I couldn't deny the brotherly love felt in that movie and the chemistry between the two. So when we were discussing what we wanted to talk about in the second segment, well, we couldn't help but come up with some fun brother team-up movies. So if you gentlemen are okay with it, I'm going to kick off with one of my favorites, and that has to be where we were all introduced for the first time to the fucking Catalina wine mixer, and that is Step Brothers. John C. Reilly, Will Ferrell, these two have been in a lot of movies together. This, I think, is by far my favorite. Now, they're not brothers, but eventually they click as Step Brothers, right? It's given in the name. But the battle between the two of them in the beginning, the teamwork that they showed when they finally united together, the singing of Conti Partiro at the end of the movie, the drum solo, it all works for me. I love Step Brothers. It's my favorite Will Ferrell movie. I'm going to lead it off with that. I understand that this isn't exactly brothers, but it is Step Brothers. And listen, I consider the two gentlemen on this podcast my brothers. So Step Brothers counts.
And that, like all the best of maybe some of these lists, they start off as enemies. That's when I love when the brothers start off.
That's right.
One's on the wrong side of the law, the other one's on the good side. Yet they have to, blood's thicker than water. No matter what happens, you got to work together. That's a good first one. I didn't think comedy. It's funny. When I was doing my list, comedy was not the first thing that came to my mind. But yeah, that's right. Comedy would work for these.
Listen, were it not for Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly teaming up, the world would never have prestige worldwide.
I guess I'll go. Or Benny, would you like to go?
No, you go right ahead, man.
I mean, I hate to do this to you, Benny and Moose. I'm just going to take the best one right off the list here. And that would be Jean-Claude Van Damme's Double Impact.
I knew you were going to do that.
That's the one with Dennis Rodman, right?
Nope, that's not the one with Dennis Rodman. That would be Double Team, where Van Damme teams up with a arms dealer played by Dennis Rodman, and the villain is played by Mickey Rourke. I'm talking about Double Impact, early 90s film. I think it's 90 or 91, where he finds out there. This is something that Van Damme's actually done more than once in his career. He plays both roles. You get the twin brother roles of Van Damme a la Van Damme. Double the Van Damme. One's like a L.A. kind of preppy boy. The other one's a badass criminal who have to team up to avenge their parents' death that were killed by the mafia years ago. I mean, you got the guy from Enter the Dragon, Bolo, in this. Like, guy played Chinese Hercules. Just great back and forth between, you know, I love, this is before CGI. This is back when they had to shoot every scene two times, with Van Damme doing a wardrobe change, and I just love these old school movies where one person is playing two roles. And Double Impact is one of Van Damme's better movies, to be honest with you. He's not, you know, I think his best film is probably Time Cop. And then Lionheart is probably his best B movie. Time Cop being his best A plus movie, followed by Universal Soldier. But Double Impact falls in the B category, but it's one of his best B movies. I think it's fun. I think the martial arts is awesome. And I think Van Damme actually does play both roles differently. And it's fun to see them actually interact. I loved it as a kid, and I revisited it as an adult about a year ago. And it held up really well, surprisingly well. So Double Impact, you're not going to get much better than that, but I'll let you guys try.
So. The gauntlet is thrown.
So I'm going with a movie that not only gives you one set of brothers, it gives you two. And that is The Lost Boys.
Oh, yeah.
The 80s greatest vampire movie. So you have Sean Patrick and Corey Haim playing the main brothers. And then you also have the iconic Frog Brothers. So you have two sets of brothers battling against the greatest vampire ever put on screen, which is Kiefer Sutherland's main villain in this movie. It's pure 80s cheese. It's Twilight without all the stuff that you hate. It's an iconic 80s classic. You definitely should see it, man.
That's a good counter.
If you're listening to this podcast and haven't seen The Lost Boys, unsubscribe, go watch the movie, come back and subscribe. What is wrong with you?
We are willing to lose your viewership until you come back having watched The Lost Boys. I agree. Damn, that was a good throw, Benny. Okay, that's making me rethink and reshuffle here. So now I gotta re-ante this up. Let's talk about two other brothers. A couple of Irish folk in the city of Boston. Deciding that they're going to team up and take on the Russian mob.
Oh, no.
Because they believe that God has inspired them. God has basically hired them. And in the process, they were reunited with their long-lost serial killer father. And that would be the Boondock Saints.
Wow. More William Dafoe on this episode. I love it.
You can never go wrong with enough Willem.
Defend this movie, because this is a movie I think that kind of has a bad rap now. It is like seen as like every college guy's favorite movie. And then they graduate college and they realize it's not really a good movie. There's still things I like about it. I do think I liked it more when I was younger. And as my film taste, I guess you could say, got a little bit sharper. It definitely has its flaws. But Defoe delivers in this movie. And there is some cool stuff in there.
I 100% agree with that. Like I watched the movie about a year ago, and for me, it doesn't hold up as much as it did when I was like in my 20s. But still, as far as brothers teaming up to kick some ass, this fits that mold pretty well. They kick a lot of ass in this movie. And I agree. I think the best performance in this movie is bar none. Willem Dafoe's as the FBI agent. I could watch that character just on screen for hours and hours and hours. But yeah, overall, Boondock Saints, has not aged well. Every bit of what you just said, JT, is exactly sums up this movie. This was great in like the early 2000s. It's not a movie. I don't condone a ton of violence, but it is, as far as brothers teaming up to kick some ass, this movie fits that mold.
I think it's apt that you bring that up when we're talking about the end of the Snyderverse, because this is the best Zack Snyder movie that he didn't ever make, because it is just like classical music, slow-mo people killing each other, one character with depth, a lot of characters out of depth, but for whatever reason, I still like it, so I think it's the perfect choice for what's at hand.
All right, JT. All right,
I guess, yeah, you're up next. I'm gonna class up a little bit after our last couple choices. An Oscar-winning director, early '90s. Well, you know, I mentioned Double Impact, where two brothers had to team up, twins actually, to fight the mafia. But what's tougher than a mafia? How about the elements of fire? That's right. I'm talking Kurt Russell, William Baldwin, and Ron Howard's Backdraft.
Backdraft!
I rewatched the 4K of this movie about a month ago. It looks beautiful on 4K, by the way. So if you haven't gotten 4K, get it. I love this movie. Kurt Russell, that's all you need to say, and I'll watch the movie. You don't have to say anything else. I'm just a huge Kurt Russell fan. I already came to conclusion my next English Bulldog will be called Captain Ron. That will be his name. yeah, I really dig this movie, man. The set pieces are just so I love CGI. It allows us to do so much. Avatar looks great. But man, I watch this movie and I get to see the practical effects that Ron Howard put on display in this movie. The scene at the end where the brothers are literally teaming up. Kurt Russell's hurt and he sees William Baldwin fighting the fire and he says, "That's my goddamn brother." Brings a tear to my eye every time, man. De Niro, great supporting cast. But again, two brothers who are, you know, don't see eye to eye, have a rocky relationship and have to come together to fight Scott Glenn and, you know, fire. So love me some Backdraft. Great brother movie, great family movie. And one Ron Howard's, you know, biggest blockbusters, honestly. It's not Apollo 13, but it's a really fun, entertaining film.
So actually, Backdraft was going to be the third on my list, so I'll have to throw an audible when we get to there. But I started you off with Four Brothers, so next I'm going to go to The Tale of Three Brothers, which is the original Godfather, since we've also had the Mafia mentioned.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah. So it is the tale of three brothers trying to live in their father's shadow. Like, I rewatched it this time of year. I know it's like cliche for a middle-aged man to watch The Godfather. I don't care. Like, a lot of times for me, like, you know, I'm not a big mafia movie guy. A lot of times they feel like they drag on. This movie is so perfectly paced. Like, there's like 10 minutes of, like, you know, Michael in Italy, I think you could have cut out. But other than that, like, the movie is so tight, and even though that, like, you know, it's a mob movie that's not, like, constantly shooting out, it never feels like it gets boring. And so you have Three Brothers, one of the greatest films of all time. Can't say nothing negative about it. It's my number two pick, man.
I mean, Benny's coming in pretty strong. Pretty strong. Now, this was a little lower down my list, but I am inspired by JT's pick of Kurt Russell. That being said, I'm also going to nominate a movie about three brothers. That would be the Earp brothers and their adventures in the city of Tombstone. And that would be the movie Tombstone. Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton. Great movie. I had it listed. I heard Kurt Russell being thrown, and I'm like, I have a better Kurt Russell movie to throw out there, and that movie is Tombstone. Again, if you have not seen Tombstone, folks, unsubscribe, go watch it, then watch The Lost Boys, then come back to us, please.
Tombstone, I would say, is my second favorite Western of all time. Number one, I would probably give The Unforgiven. I just love Unforgiven. I think it would deserve the best picture. But Tombstone is maybe the most entertaining at Western you could possibly watch. And yeah, it is about a bunch of brothers. Good call. I didn't even think of that one.
Well, you're up, Slugger.
All right. Well, you know, a lot of these brothers are teaming up to kick ass. But sometimes brothers don't have to team up. Sometimes they have to butt heads. So I'm going to go with Gavin O'Connor's, I think, much beloved, sports film Warrior, starring Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're just it's one of those rare things where they made a Rocky movie where both guys are Rocky. You're rooting for both of them. I remember watching this in the theater and being legit torn, not knowing who I wanted to win. And I think that was a really interesting way to tackle this. Nick Nolte's amazing as the father. I don't know if he was nominated, but he might have been nominated for Best Supporting in this movie. I'd have to double check, but he might have been. But yeah, Warrior, I just feel like is one of the better sports movies of the last 10 years or so. I'm not even sure. Wait, is it 10 years old? It can't be more than that, right? God, how old am I now? What year? I'm going to check right now. What year did Warrior come out?
2011.
Okay, so yeah, holy shit, it's more than 10 years. Anyway, it's a great film. I think it holds up really well. I think the brother dynamic between them is really well played. I think Tom Hardy gives just a fierce performance. He is the most intimidating he has probably ever been, up there with, you know, Bane obviously is probably his most intimidating, but this is right underneath. I think his role in this is fantastic. Joel Edgerton also is amazing in this film. And it really is a family dynamic with them, their father, and all their demons come to head in the octagon. And it has a great Kurt Angle kind of role in it too, which Vin, and he plays like a Russian, like UFC fighter. It's amazing. So yeah, check out Warrior if you haven't seen it. Two brothers going to battle to earn each other's respect and love.
So I started you off with four. Then I went to three brothers. JTE stole my two brother movie, so I'm going to have to call an audible here. And since I throw so much shade on indie cinema in the last segment, I'm going to give you two brothers from an indie film from a couple of years ago, Hell and High Water.
Ooh, oh, I have that on my list too. Yeah. Yes.
Which is an excellent movie. You get to see Ben Foster get totally robbed out of an Oscar for an awesome performance. It's two brothers trying to carry out a series of robberies to stop their family homestead from getting totally demolished. It's a great heist movie. It's a great drama. And it's a great stick it to the man movie. And it's also just a great story of like, two brothers have just really went down sort of the wrong road in life, trying to redeem themselves with sort of their last stand. And it didn't get it got a lot of attention, but I don't think it got the awards and the prestige that it should have had. So if you get a chance to check it out, it's really worth a watch.
Bridges is also exceptional in that movie. Jeff Bridges. Yeah. Great good call. Movie. I had Hell or High Water on my list too, Benny. Okay, well, I already told you about a set of brothers that believed that God was on their side and inspired. I'm going to talk about another couple of brothers who are also on a mission from God to save their orphanage. And that would be Joliet, Jake, and Elwood Blues, the Blues Brothers. Absolutely love The Blues Brothers. It's one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time. I can listen to that soundtrack over and over and over. I adore this movie. It's got everything that'll tickle my fancy. It's got good music. It's got John Candy in there. It's got a little bit of young Dan Aykroyd. You got some Belushi in there. I absolutely love this movie. The car chases in this movie are crazy. The one-liners from this movie are outstanding. The like, I hate Illinois Nazis, like just the crazy stuff that like these two brothers get into and just how stoic they stay the entire time. Nothing phases them. I adore the Blues Brothers. I don't know if I'm going. Apparently, all these missions from God, all these signs from God are pointing me in the direction of these brother movies.
Wow. I hate to say this, but it's on my list of shame. I've never seen Blue Brothers.
Oh, no way.
I know. I have to correct it. I just never saw it. I was never a fan of musicals, and I think I thought as a kid it was a musical, so I just never checked it out. But I need to watch it. I'm going to rectify that very soon.
It is and it isn't. Yeah.
I would say this. Like, I love the Blues Brothers, but I think I have a lot of nostalgia tied to it because it's something I watched a lot on VHS when I was a kid. I don't think the pacing holds up well today. I think it's one of those movies, if you didn't grow up watching it, like if you're coming in cold and you're like a 20-year-old watching it now, I don't think you'll like it. But if you're someone that's in their 40s and you like that 80s style pacing of comedies that's a little slower, I think it will hit for you.
Nice. Do you guys have any honorable mentions? I have like maybe one, but do you guys have any?
I got a few honorable mentions, but I'll let you guys throw out yours first.
Go ahead, Benny. Start off.
So I'm going to give an honorable mention. So I'm trying to throw like positive lights on things I usually talk shit about, you know, since I threw an indie movie in there. So I am a well-known hater of Pixar movies. I generally despise Pixar, but I am going to throw some positiveness of the Pixar movie Onward. Like that is, that is a fun fantasy family movie. And I think if it had not come out like when the pandemic first was like really hitting, I think that movie could have been so big. It's such an enjoyable, like fun filled, like movie. And like the voice cast, I think fits everyone really well. And so like, if you missed it because it came out in the pandemic and you have like kids or you're just, or you're someone that enjoys like animation and you missed it, it's such a feel-good movie, and especially if you got like that nerd gene in you like a lot of us do, it does hit that fantasy sci-fi notes in there too, so definitely give it a watch.
I have Onward on my list as well. Yeah, I dug that movie so much, and I agree 100%. That movie should have been so much more, like such a larger movie than it was, and yeah, it was great. The voice casting of that is perfect. Like, Tom Holland and Chris Pratt have like amazing chemistry together, even though they're never really on, you know, together. Like they're, it's all obviously voice work, but still the movie works a lot for me. So yeah, I had Onward on my honorable mentions as well. JT, how about you? What's your honorable mentions, buddy?
I was pretty underwhelmed by Onward, so can't join. Yeah,
you like poor things. Your opinion can't be trusted.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Maybe if there was more sexual accent. I did. It wasn't bad though. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like, oh, that was bad. It was fine. Maybe I'll give it a rewatch one of these days. The last honorable mention I'll give to is, listen, I just got back from Vegas last week where I didn't win a goddamn penny. So I'm going to give Rain Man a little shout out here.
Oh, there you go.
They team up and go out there and they kick Vegas's ass until they get found out. So Tom Cruise, Dustin Hoffman, Oscar winning film. Great team up. Great movie about a relationship about brothers. And they team up to take out Vegas. I love it.
That's Barry Levinson, right?
Yep.
Yep. Still got it, folks. Okay. My list of honorable mentions. One of the best MCU movies, that would be Thor Ragnarok. You have Loki. You have Thor teaming up. Fantastic. Next, The Goonies. Goonies Never Say Die.
Watched it two nights ago. Still one of the all-time goats.
Yeah, baby. This movie just... I'm going to throw this out. The movie Orange County. One, because I am from Orange County. But two, Jack Black, the brother in this movie to Colin Hanks, reminds me so much of my own brother, Tommy. Shout out to Tommy boy. Because there's a scene in Orange County where Jack Black is going to jump into the pool to save Colin Hanks. And he stops right before he jumps in the pool. He takes off his socks. And mind you, he's wearing nothing but underwear at this point. So he stops to take off his socks and then jumps into the pool to save his brother from drowning. It's totally a move that my brother would make. And then the last one, and this is just one that I've rewatched a couple of times, and like the couple of times I rewatched, I really enjoy it. And it's the movie Logan Lucky. And it's about the Logan family with Channing Tatum and Adam Driver, directed by Barry Sonnenfeld. I absolutely adore this movie. Steven Soderbergh.
I agree with you on that movie. That movie's underrated, and it's the only contribution John Denver ever made to humanity.
Yes, Country Roads is featured a lot in that movie.
I've not seen Logan Lucky. I've heard mixed things.
That's a good little heist movie.
It's a good little heist movie, yeah. Just even if you watch it just for the sheer sake of Adam Driver's role in the movie as just this kind of like unlucky like vet with one arm. it's a fun movie. I would highly recommend it.
One last honorable mention, 21 Jump Street. They're not really brothers.
Oh, there you
but
go.
They play brothers throughout the movie.
Janko and Schmidt, baby.
Yes. That's the last one I'll throw in there.
I absolutely. The 21, like, I want a 23rd Jump Street movie so bad. It still kills me that the Men in Black 21 Jump Street combo never came to fruition. So much opportunity wasted there.
And they just threw away $500 million right there.
Yes. And dumped it into Killers of the Flower Moon. You're welcome, America. Well, stay tuned, folks. We're going to be right back where we will review Aquaman 2, The Lost Kingdom.
I need to bring us together.
Yeah! This isn't the plan.
No, Master Wayne. This is the team.
Justice League. Experience it in IMAX.
Atlantis has always had a king. Now it needs something more. A hero.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Your brother is about to declare war. We must stop him.
Sounds like fun.
Let's do it. I'm nobody. But I came to save my home and the people that I love. Miss Kirsty.
Aquaman. Rated PG-13. Experience it in IMAX December 21st.
Welcome back, folks, and we're going to talk about the death, the end, the great sunset to the 10-year span that was the DCEU. And how they chose to end it was Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. James Wan, coming back after having directed the first Aquaman movie, with probably a mixed review of this movie. Now, the original Aquaman came out and seems to be very well liked by a lot of people. Now, myself, I'm torn. There's fun to be had in that movie. It's just compared to some of the other DCEU movies at that point in time. The other ones had kind of hit it out of the park. Aquaman was just a safe play, I think. But Aquaman 2 wraps up the DCEU and Momoa's run as the character of Arthur Curry, aka Aquaman. Now, this movie had some uphill obstacles and some behind-the-scenes struggles. And there have been many, many rewrites of this story. There have been many, many reshoots of this movie. The movie was taken back. There was another cut that was issued. There was more money dumped into it. So this movie has had an uphill battle, much like a lot of the DCEU movies in the last maybe 2 years. It came out this weekend to a total of $38 million on, I believe this was a $250 million budget. It's seeing some success internationally right now. It actually has done better internationally than it has domestically in the last 4 days. So there's a chance it could make it money back. As it stands, it's at $127 million worldwide. So it is getting some viewership. Gents, let's talk non-spoiler reviews of Aquaman. JT, kick us off. You loved the first one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think the first Aquaman is just a blast of the time at the movie theater. I think it's such a fun film. It's probably out of all the, you know, I said this earlier, DCU is a very serious, you know, comic book kind of franchise when Snyder was at the helm. Aquaman felt like the first one that was like Saturday morning cartoon. I said it felt like someone gave a 13-year-old a $300 million check, said to make a movie. And James Wan put a lot of energy into that film. So I was really excited for this film. I'll just say this. Is it as good as the first one? Absolutely not. It's hard to argue that this is even a good movie. But at the same time, and I'll use the same reference I used earlier, if you're looking for like a Saturday morning cartoon kind of movie where it's just an explosion, set piece, explosion, I think you could have a decent time in this movie. I don't think it's has much of a plot that holds together. It felt like this movie was chopped up in post-production in the editing bay. It feels like too many cooks in the kitchen. It feels like they read every card after a screening and decided to change everything. I would love to see what the original vision of this film was and when there was going to be an actual DCEU. Unfortunately, I think, you know, we even heard on line that, you know, Batman was supposed to be in this movie. It was, he filmed a scene with Ben Affleck. He also filmed a scene with Michael Keaton. Mm-hmm. There's, this movie went through a lot of changes, I think, throughout the, it was done 2 years ago. This movie's been in the can for 2 years. And I think it went through a lot of changes, and what we got, I think, is not 100% what James Wan probably envisioned. But all that being said, Jason Momoa is still great as a character as Aquaman. I think he has great chemistry with Patrick Wilson. I like, you know, the villain to, you know, team up kind of brother thing that's going on here. I think Renda Park is given a bigger role here, and I think he's a lot of fun in the film. Mantis is back. I kind of feel like they could have gone with the new villain. I feel like his story at the most, he could have been lesser of a role in this film. Maybe I would have been fine with like a Scarecrow-esque cameo. I think they should have introduced another villain. The villain we do get, who's kind of the person behind the scenes, I won't get into spoilers, but he feels kind of lazy. He feels like he could have been pulled out of any comic book. Not something that would have specifically come in from an Aquaman comic book or a Aquaman story. I don't know if he comes from the comics, but doesn't feel like it. It feels like he was just made up for this movie. But like I said, if you just want to shut your brain off, throw some popcorn in your mouth, the money is on the screen. I will say that. And James Wan, whether he has a good script or good story or not, he is such a director who injects energy into his filmmaking. There are some great camera movements in this. There are some great build-up action set pieces, and the composition of the action. It's not like Transformers where it's just a bunch of googly goop and you're like, what's happening? I'm not sure what's happening between the explosions and the CGI. James Wan, I think, has a really good eye for action, and he has a really good ear for tone. This movie doesn't take itself too seriously, just like the first movie didn't take itself too seriously. So while I think this is nowhere near as good as the first film, and I think it's a mess because of everything that's happening outside of the film, I think you could still go to this movie and have a decent time. You're not going to be, you know, kicking the seat in front of you thinking, how much longer until I get the hell out of here? I think you're just, if you're just going for a blockbuster entertainment, it's passable. And James Wan, his skills as a director and his, you know, ability to make some of the CGI exciting is present throughout this movie. And I said this after the first film, it felt like a really good Steven Sommers film, because when Steven Sommers got really bad, he'd made Van Helsing, and he made some other movies that weren't very good. This film, you know, the first Aquaman felt more like Steven Sommers' The Mummy, whereas this one feels more like Steven Sommers' G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. Take that as you will.
Nice. All right. Fair enough. Benny, your review, my friend.
So I really liked the first Aquaman movie. I don't know that it necessarily fit very well with the rest of the DCEU that was happening at the time. But like it on its own, I thought was a very good, very fun comic book movie. This movie, I think the most apt comparison is the most recent Thor movie, Thor: Love and Thunder.
Mm.
And that's my least favorite MCU movie. It is the very bottom of the barrel of the MCU for me. I don't think this movie is as bad as Thor: Love and Thunder, but I think it very much had the same syndrome in that, is it's just that everything has to be a joke. There must be a joke. Okay, it's been 3 seconds. There must be a joke. And they didn't really care if the joke was set up. They didn't really care if the joke made sense or was going to land, but damn it, it's been 3 seconds. We're going to have us a joke. And to me, the jokes didn't really land, so I felt like I was watching a comedy that wasn't funny. And to me, that's one of the worst movie experiences you can have, is watching a comedy that just is not funny. And watching this movie, the entire time, I got like a really strong sense of, this is not the movie. And you can tell watching this movie that it has gone through a blender 3 or 4 times, and that this was not what we're supposed to get. So I'll disagree with JTE slightly on James Wan. I don't feel like I was watching a James Wan movie. I feel like I was watching a bunch of James Wan scenes that somebody else had chopped up and put together and then strung some other scenes along loosely to get us to the end. So the entire time,
I agree with that.
Yeah,
I'll just say I do agree with what you're saying there. I guess the point I was making is James Wan, he's too good of a director for his style not to creep out, even if it's buried under a bunch of edits. And who knows what the hell they did.
So, like, if you would take cross sections of this movie and say, okay, here's 3 minutes of this movie, you'd be like, man, that's really cool. That crab guy, that's a cool creature design. That's a cool action scene. But as a whole, they're just strung together with these god-awful attempts at humor. And to me, it just did not work. I don't think it's Thor, Love, and Thunder bad. It's not a good movie, but I mean, there's fun to be had in it, but it's not something I'm going to pop on and see. However, if somewhere down the road in 5 years after, you know, Warner Brothers goes bankrupt or changes CEOs six more times, I would like to see what the original ideal for this movie is.
So Aquaman 2 is the perfect send-up for the DCEU in that it started very strong and then went really, really flat really quick, and they ended with a stinker, and that, in my opinion, is what Aquaman 2 is. It's not a very good movie. There is fun to be had. I will concede that. I think the relationship between Aquaman and Orm, his brother, is the most fun in the movie. But I also agree that the humor just does not hit. Now, there is humor in Aquaman 1. The humor in Aquaman 1 was actually, it worked. It took itself a little more seriously in the first Aquaman. Took itself a lot more seriously than this movie, let's be honest. But the humor that was in Aquaman, like one scene that comes particularly to mind is when him and his father are, Aquaman and his father, Tamora Morrison, are at the bar and they're drinking, and the guys come up and they want to get selfies. And there's just kind of this like quick little 10 second montage of all these like crazy selfies that these guys are taking. That was fun. The humor in this movie just does not work for me. And I agree 100%. They just kept going for the humor. I also agree 100% with what you guys said about this just being a blender of a movie. There is so much that you can tell was either forcefully added. There is so much that you can tell was just getting through scenes because, you know what, they didn't like this one. They didn't like this one. They didn't like this one. So we're going to try this one. All in all, the movie is the perfect way to send out the DCEU. It doesn't know what it wants to be. It's a mix and mash of potentially great moments mixed with just terrible, terrible filmmaking decisions. The only thing that worked for me in this movie was the relationship between Orm and Aquaman, Patrick Wilson and Jason Momoa. I was glad that this movie was focusing on Black Manta. I like Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. He was a standout in the first movie. I loved that character. What didn't work for me was this other villain that is pulling the strings behind the scenes and kind of possessing him, because then the movie is no longer about Aquaman having to take on Black Manta. It's about Aquaman having to take on Black Manta, who's possessed by this weird demon king. Like, all of that didn't work for me. I was thinking about this. So Ant-Man, the original Ant-Man for the MCU, was a very small contained movie, right? There wasn't like world ending stakes, but what was happening could potentially affect the world, like ramification wise. And that movie worked. It worked really, really well. And then Ant-Man and the Wasp got a little more crazier with them going into the quantum realm, but the movie was still a smaller contained movie, and it still served as a good sequel to Ant-Man. And then Ant-Man shit the bed with Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, where all of a sudden a whole galaxy, the whole microverse is at stake, and they're taking on hundreds of thousands of bad guys, and it just got too big for this character. And I feel like this story would have been better if it was a smaller story of two brothers having to, again, to JTE's point, one brother that's in trouble, that's Orm, right, who's locked away in prison, and Aquaman creating a relationship with each other. They've only ever hated each other their entire lives, but now they're forced to work together. They're forced to create a relationship and take on a character like Black Manta. That would have been so much better if they would have kept it a smaller story rather than having this global ending thing that occurs at the end of the movie.
I'll disagree with you on this one. So let's jump into spoilers. Let's take, you know, let's take the heads off here, except mine will stay on. let's go ahead and talk spoilers, because I want to get into that. I disagree.
Okay.
What you just said, because what I loved about that first Aquaman was that it just kept up in the ante and scale and epic craziness.
Sure.
And I feel like this movie didn't live up to that like the first film. I thought the end of this film and the villain didn't have the same epicness. At the end of the first Aquaman, he like befriends a giant kaiju freaking monster and interrupts a giant undersea war battle. And it's just, and then the movie ends with like a Lethal Weapon one-on-one fight on top of a submarine or some sort of ship. The movie just, I mean, there's a title, there's like a tsunami in the first 20 minutes that takes out like the coastline in the first Aquaman. I love the scale of that first Aquaman and how it just kept putting a hat on top of hat on top of hat. Like, it just kept upping the ante. So when this movie came out, I think it started off pretty slow at first, but I was interested in the story of Manta trying to find, you know, this, they're in Antarctica and they're going through the ice and there's that James Wan kind of horror element. But for me, with my issue with this movie was, while it was fast-paced, action-packed, the ending didn't feel as epic or as large scale as that first film. And to me, that was a kind of a downer and kind of a disappointing.
Well, that's the problem with the first Aquaman, is you go balls to the wall gangbuster with this. You have to try to top it in the second one. It would have been better if you just ended it without that. I understand the reason for introducing the Black Trident, right? Because Yahya Abdul-Mateen is at the end of the day just a human, right? He uses the power suit. So you have to give him something that's going to be able to have him go toe-to-toe with a god like Aquaman, right? So I understand that concept of it, and I would have been fine. The whole possession thing and then the Lost Kingdom and the big baddie that comes out of the Lost Kingdom, like, all of that didn't work. Like,
I agree. Yeah, I agree. The villain, one of the biggest things about comic books for me, especially comic book movies, and, you know, Batman, 90s Batman movies were all about the villain, right? Who's going to be the next villain to show up in this movie? And when you do a Superman or Batman or Aquaman, that second movie is an opportunity to introduce another great comic book villain from the comics. I don't know if this Sauron of the Sea, I call him that because he looks like Sauron from Lord of the Rings. I don't know if he's from the comics, but if he is, I don't think he was the right guy to introduce in this movie. I have no problem with Black Manta, you know, being a part of it. I would love if he teamed up with like another supervillain to try to take out Aquaman. But this guy who, like, you know, is this evil looking king, he looks kind of, doesn't look that scary. And toward the end of this movie, when there's like a green like mist surrounding them and his like Lord of the Rings, like, do what I say, like he was holding the Ring of Mordor, it just looked bad.
Looked terrible.
Yeah, it looked terrible. And I had no tension. I was like, the first movie gave me a giant war battle with seahorses and sharks literally fighting each other, ships exploding underwater, a giant kaiju monster taking out a whole army. And this thing kind of ends like in a throne room. I mean, there is some battles before that, but it basically takes place with a couple guys fighting in a throne room and some bad CGI. So the ending was honestly the most disappointing part of this movie. I was enjoying it for the most part for the first two thirds. And then I thought the third act really kind of failed me.
So I would say that I think one of the great failings of the DCEU is they were afraid to embrace like one of the basic tenets of the DC comics. So in the DC comics, like a lot of times, unlike Marvel, the heroes are godlike, whereas the villains are very human. They're not necessarily overpowered, but they manage to always go up against these gods. Like, You know, Superman's most iconic villain is just a human, Lex Luthor. Batman's most iconic villain is the Joker, just a human. You know, Aquaman's most iconic villain, Black Manta, just a human. And they've always been afraid to embrace that as a starting point. They always needed their villains to be some overpowered, you know, tentacle monster to compete with Marvel. But that's not the core of DC. It's okay to have smaller villains, especially in DC. That's part of the core. That's part of why the characters work. And so I think they were afraid to just use a human villain like Black Manta or Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. And they never went all in on that. And like, you even see this on the Suicide Squad, as like, I don't know this, and someday I would like to see the David Ayer cut of Suicide Squad. As I always felt like the Joker, Jared Leto's Joker, whatever you feel about him, was supposed to be the villain of that movie. And they're like, nah, that's just a guy. We need these giant, flappy, fiery tentacle monsters. And I think that's something they consistently did with here. Like, there is a legitimate conflict with Black Manta. Aquaman kills his dad in the first movie. There's a there is a human story, a conflict that makes sense that you have established, you know, in a previous movie. But they didn't lean with that. Instead, they went with a villain that no one knows, a conflict no one understands, that happened with their dad, who we never have met. And so even though they went bigger, there's no stakes because we don't care what's happening. Whereas they should have leaned into the very real human conflict that we all know. And I think that's really where the movie lost us, when they got afraid to stick with the villain that they naturally had.
Well said, Benny. I 100% agree with that. I think it was that, I mean, we've all kind of tiptoed on it. I'm just going to kind of go into a quick little rant about like the studio intervention when it comes to the DCEU. The DCEU kicked off with such promise. You had the Man of Steel. Again, we go back a few episodes, folks, when we talked Blue Beetle and we gave our DCEU rankings. The DCEU started off with so much promise. You had Man of Steel. Then you had Batman versus Superman. Maybe it wasn't the greatest movie. I enjoyed Batman versus Superman. And it finally gave us this big conflict between the two biggest, you know, arguably the two biggest superheroes in the world, Batman versus Superman. Gave us the introduction to Wonder Woman. And then they kept going. But then it always felt to me like the DCEU was trying to catch up to Marvel instead of being their own thing. And I think the studio executives were constantly trying to keep up with Marvel. David Ayer's Suicide Squad is awful. He swears famously that there is a totally different movie, the Ayer cut of the Suicide Squad that he made. And that halfway through, the studio basically came to him and said, you need more humor. Basically, they told him, you need to make Guardians of the Galaxy with these characters. And then to your point, Benny, they basically cut out the seriousness, and I think that a lot was the Joker. I agree. And then they beef up the Enchantress to be the villain, and the movie is garbage. It's hated. And then the next movie to come out is the Justice League movie, right? We have seen Zack Snyder's vision for what he wanted the Justice League movie to be, and it is awesome. But then we got the Joss Whedon Justice League movie, where, again, the studio said, you know what? We need to be like Marvel. You need to put together a funny Avengers-type movie. And the Justice League movie comes out, and it's not great. Then they ease off a little bit, and they allow a couple of directors to do their thing. Patty Jenkins comes in and gives us a great Wonder Woman movie. Outstanding. You get David F. Sandberg's first Shazam movie. The first Shazam movie is a good movie. So we start to get a little momentum again. But, hey, box office returns aren't coming up. Be like Marvel. So there's so much studio intervention in these movies that constantly just the DCEU didn't know what it wants to be. And that's exactly what this movie is. I could see the James Wan elements. Like when they go to the deserter kingdom, they only briefly spend a few moments there, but the creatures, these are like former like Atlantean type people who have basically survived in the desert off of blood instead of water, and they worship death. And there's such a cool, like, horror concept that can come from that. And it's just a 10-minute quick scene. But that scene where he breaks Orm out of the desert, that's the best part of the movie by far. You have these crazy, weird creatures that are hunting them down, and they're riding these crazy, weird creatures. And you kind of get an idea that, like, this is Atlanteans require the water to be able to survive. And then Orm's just kind of this, like, fish out of water, pun intended, right? The first time he's running, he's, like, running with his arms behind him. And he's like, they're like, why the hell are you running like that? And he's like, oh, I've never ran before. Like, you get the sense that he just has not spent really any time outside of the sea. That all worked for me. But then it just, there's no explanation. It's like the trench. The trench was a cool idea in the first James, or in the first Aquaman movie. That was, the best part of that movie. It was a cool, very horroristic type environment. And then we didn't really go anywhere. And then the same thing happens with this one. We get introduced to this really cool kingdom, spend a little time there. We don't have to keep jumping around. We don't have to, like, this movie doesn't have to go as fast as it needed to. And as fast as it needed to go, this movie still felt boring for me. Like, there was pacing issues. Almost fell asleep at one point in time. So this feels appropriate for the DCEU to end with this movie. It's just a chopped up movie that doesn't really know what it wants to be, and that the director and probably most of the cast really didn't care for.
Yeah. I'll just say this. Like, there are a lot of elements that felt very similar of other movies. The whole council, I thought, was like, you could have just taken it out of the movie. Yep. We don't need to, like, I don't want to reveal ourselves to the humans. It felt like Wakanda from MCU. Like,
yes.
Point by point. Like, I was like, what are we doing here? Do your own thing. Don't be copying Marvel.
But they did
100%. They did at the very end.
The last scene and the last line of the movie were basically ripped off from Marvel. He reveals the existence of Atlanta to the United Nations. Hello, T'Challa did that in Black Panther. And then the final line is, I am Aquaman. The most famous line taken from the MCU.
I feel like at that point, they know the ship is sinking, and they're just flipping everybody off before they go underwater. Because I don't know. That had to be a reshoot thing. Like, listen, this is going to be the last DC movie. Let's just give a little MCU, you know, middle finger as we leave out the door.
Yeah, that felt indicative to everything I've been saying about them going, like, be like Marvel. So you ended the DCEU like Marvel. Well done.
And that's to the point of the whole thing. The instead of being a movie, a lot of times it felt like a shitty parody. Like, it ended as a parody of Iron Man instead of being a good movie with a solid ending. And I'll say this, the second that the baby peed in his mouth, like 5 minutes in, I was like, oh shit, I'm going to hate this. I just know I'm going to hate this. And it just kept with that tone, man. And it lost me right there, and it never got me back.
The opening scene I thought was going to be so awesome. That's when I already started to roll my eyes, when he's doing this narrative and he's like, he's going to take on all these pirates. And then you just get small little tiny clips of him, like, actually doing the action. And then he's playing around with the action figures in front of his son. And at that moment I was like, uh-oh. I was a little worried as soon as that happened, but I'm curious, guys. Obviously, there was some controversy behind this with the Amber Heard filming, and her and Momoa have very, very vocally said how much they dislike each other and how much they did not get along on set. And you've heard all kinds of crazy rumors and read stories. How did you think that James Wan handled Amber Heard in this movie?
I felt like she was definitely cut out of it quite a bit. I feel like they kept just what they needed to keep the story to able to, like, be somewhat complete and move forward. I think they just used as little as they could. And what you see in the movie is what I could get away with because of she probably had a bigger role in the movie, honestly.
She's not even really in it, man. I think she's in, what, 3 scenes in the movie and maybe has, like, 4 sentences of dialogue. So whatever was going on, their solution was just to cut her out, which this is just my feeling on the matter. I don't pay attention really to a lot of Hollywood gossip. So I'm sure there's a reason that people are angry at her, But she was already in the movie. She's still in the movie.
Yeah.
So you're going to take the hit regardless because she's still in the movie. You may as well, if the character was going to add something or her performance contributed something, since you're already taking the hit, just leave it in there. You can tell that her character was cut out intentionally and that there were pieces missing where that character was supposed to be. So they got the worst of both worlds. They lost what the character could add, and then they still took the PR hit. So it made no sense to me at all how they handled it.
Yep, I agree. That's actually quite well said. And yeah, what she's in the movie enough. I mean, she's got probably a total of maybe 15 to 20 minutes screen time in the movie. She has a scene where she saves Arthur Curry. So there's enough of her in the movie, and then there's enough reasons in the movie for her unexplained absence. Oh, she's been very badly injured in, you know, the fight against Black Manta. So therefore she needs time to recover. So I thought that was handled well enough. And I agree 100%, whether you subscribe to, you know, the Hollywood rumors, whether you don't, one way or the other, they obviously had her signed to be in this movie and she was going to be in it. And the amount of time that she spent in the movie was fine. Her role in the movie was fine. That was really all you needed. They wanted to tell a story about Orm and Aquaman finally coming together to take on Black Manta and this growing threat. That was fine. JT touched on it earlier, but I also wanted to touch on this too. Randall Park had a much more expanded role in this. In the first one, he was maybe in one scene, then he was in the post-credit scene with Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. And I like Randall Park. I dig a lot of what Randall Park does. He had this movie on Netflix called Always Be My Maybe. I thought it was great. So I like Randall Park, and I like to see him in these movies. I hope he continues to get larger roles. I like his character in the MCU as Jimmy Woo. He had a blink and miss at cameo in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. But I thought he was a positive. And I don't know if you guys caught this, but did you catch Jiminy Glick make a little appearance in the movie? Ah, okay.
I did not. What?
Martin Short voiced Kingfish. As soon as he started to talk, I was like, oh shit, that's Martin Short basically doing Jiminy Glick as Kingfish.
That's hilarious. I thought you meant Jiminy Glick actually showed up in the movie, and I was like, how did I miss that? No, yes. I remember. So when the scene came on, I said, I know this voice. And I specifically looked for it in the credits, and when I saw Martin Short, I was like, oh, okay. That's hilarious. I thought you literally met Jiminy Glick showed up in the movie. And I was like, where?
No, yeah, he voices the Kingfish, but like his first line is he does the like, oh, hello, Aquaman. Like the Jiminy Glick, like high to low voice. Uh-huh. Like, and I was like, oh shit. Okay, Martin Short is Kingfish, and he's basically doing his best impression of Jiminy Glick.
I'll say, strangely enough, like I'll disagree with you slightly on Randall Park's performance in the movie. So I enjoyed his performance in the movie. While he's on screen, I enjoy it. But like as a part of the movie as a whole, like here's the thing, like Dr. Shin in the first movie is like a very semi-serious character.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he is playing Jimmy Woo. And so they literally just imported Jimmy Woo from the MCU and put him in this movie, even though that wasn't the character in the first movie. So whereas I enjoyed seeing Jimmy Woo because I really like Jimmy Woo, he didn't belong in this movie because it's not the character.
Yeah, I can see that. That does make sense. But I did like Randall. I'm a big Randall Park fan too. I even watched that Blockbuster show on Netflix. So I enjoyed him in this.
So last thing before we give our final thoughts, last question I have for you guys, the post-credit scene. So the DCEU ends with Aquaman announcing he is Aquaman and that the Kingdom of Atlantis exists. Then there is one post-credit scene. The DCEU ends on a post-credit scene of Patrick Wilson's character enjoying a hamburger, killing a cockroach, putting the cockroach on his hamburger and eating it because earlier in the movie, Aquaman told him that cockroaches are a delicacy. That's the final post-credit scene for the DCEU. Thoughts on that, gentlemen?
I think it's James Wan summing up the whole movie. I made this delicious hamburger. I put a lot of work into it. It was going to be fun, light, meaty. And then Warner Brothers came in and threw cockroach inside the thing. And it's not quite what I wanted it to be. So there you go.
JTE said it perfectly. I think it was just a fuck you. This isn't my movie. I think that's exactly what it is.
I 100% agree. I think it was basically his way of saying, this movie is a shit burger, folks. I had to enjoy it. You do too. Well, final thoughts, gentlemen. On the whole of the DCEU, on Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom, JT, are you sad to see the DCE go?
I am. I was a fan for the most part. I think the low point for me was Wonder Woman 1984. I thought that I rewatched that over the Thanksgiving break because I was just like, I need to give it another shot. And it's unwatchable. Like, there's nothing redeeming about it for me except for Chris Pine has a couple good jokes in it. But overall, I really liked the DCU. I liked how different it was from the MCU and how, like, Batman v Superman is a very serious movie at times. The director's cut is rated R. I enjoyed having that, you know, salt. MCU is the salt. DCU is the pepper, man. It was just something different. And I'm sad to see it go. I wonder about a world where Zack Snyder was able to do his Justice League trilogy. I thought the first Justice League movie was awful under Josh Whedon. And I had the Justice League Snyder version in my top 10 that year. I thought it was awesome. Except for maybe the last 20 minutes where they were just like bonus scenes. But if you end the Snyder Justice League cut right when Superman reveals his black suit at the very end, which basically cuts to black, that is just a great Justice League movie. And I would have loved to have seen him actually fulfill that vision. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen. I think this movie is pretty forgettable. But like I said, if you just want a fun cartoon action set piece after set piece, you could do a lot worse than Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. It definitely is going out with a whimper instead of a wham. But I'll still appreciate the first Aquaman. I'll appreciate this. And I'll watch this one just because it's the only other movie where I'll get an Aquaman movie with Jason Momoa. So as some value in that. And I'm a little worried about James Gunn's Superman. he is not the director I would have chosen to take on the next Superman film. I also was not a huge fan of The Suicide Squad. So I'm hopeful, but not super confident about where I feel like he's going to do his. He came from the MCU with Guardians. I love the Guardians. Don't get me wrong. But it feels like they're going to really try to do their version of Marvel DCU. And they went and got one of the Marvel directors to start it off. So, but we'll see. I could be wrong. I love Superman. He's my favorite DC character. So I'll be there opening night either way. And it's just weird because on my bookshelf of movies, I have, you know, like 800 Blu-rays. I have my MCU section where it's all in, you know, the order that the movies were released. And I have my DC shelf where all the DC movies are lined up in the release order. And now I'm just going to have to kind of push that to another shelf. And I'm going to have to start a new shelf for the James Gunn DC universe. We'll see where it goes. Maybe we'll love it. Maybe we'll hate it. But I know one thing's for sure. I will be there for every single one of those movies.
Benny, sad to see the DCU go. Final thoughts on Aquaman.
So I have always felt like the exact moment that the DCEU died was actually a trailer. Like, there was a trailer for Batman v Superman where they essentially spoiled the movie and showed you what the third act was going to be with Doomsday. And when that happened, I felt like the audience turned on the DCEU and then the studio turned on the DCEU. And I felt like that it was fighting an uphill battle ever since that moment. And I don't think they ever let it be what it was going to be. You know, they were always chopping at it, you know, messing with it, and just never let Zack Snyder's dark little world materialize. And I think Aquaman 2 is a lot like most movies of 2024 and a lot like most movies of the DCEU, that it was not great. It was okay. There were things about it that was fine. But in general, that's not memorable. So I think the DCEU has probably three great movies that I will revisit. But for the most part, you know, it's just going to fade into history. I don't dislike, you know, it'll be like Batman and Robin. Like maybe once every 5-10 years, I'll get a nostalgic itch and I'll throw it on. But for the most part, you know, I watch Batman 1 and 2 and the rest of it fades out of memory. And that's where the DCEU will lie. I'm with JTE. Like, I worry that James Gunn is just going to create a Guardians of the Galaxy verse with DC characters. And I'm really curious if that's going to fit, but I'm really super excited to try.
My feelings are the same with you guys. I really, really wish that the studio had let the Snyderverse actually unfold the way that he wanted it to unfold. It was tough, I think, for the DCEU because Marvel was really, really hitting its stride when it launched Man of Steel and then when it launched Batman versus Superman. The MCU at this point in time had given us 15 movies, and you had great movies. You had the Avengers, you had the Iron Man, you had Captain America, the Winter Soldier had come out. You had these movies that were almost transcending comic book movies, and Zack Snyder had a vision for the DCEU that sadly I think was poked and prodded, and too many people reached in and pulled out too much, and there was just too many people with too much insight. I would have very much liked to have seen the full Zack Snyder effect. I'm glad that we got Zack Snyder's Justice League cut. So we at least got to see what could have potentially been if they had continued that more serious, darker tone. There are movies that I will continue to revisit from the DCEU all the time. I think that there are some absolute winners of these movies. I've said it in a previous episode, but Man of Steel was the first Superman movie that actually made me like the character of Superman. And that is a huge accomplishment because I have famously gone on record as saying I just dislike that character so much. Not knocking you, JT, just that, I mean, for a comic
Richard person, Donner, Christopher Reeve, are you telling me you don't like that first movie?
They're fine. Like I said, the character of Superman's just okay. The character of Superman, but
that Richard Donner movie to me is like one of the best comic movies ever made, but I understand what you're saying.
If I had grown, so I grew up where that movie should have been in my wheelhouse a lot, but we didn't watch it surprisingly a lot at my house. So it didn't stick as much as like Batman 89 or Batman Returns. I watched those movies as often as I possibly could. We watched Big Trouble in Little China way more than we watched Richard Donner Superman. So
as well, you should. One of the greatest movies ever made.
But yeah, I am sad to see the DCEU go. The one thing that I thought the DCEU did so well was the casting of characters. Momoa as Aquaman. Aquaman has always been the joke of the DC world. And they chose just this cool, hip surfer, you know, frat boy to be Aquaman. And he was great in the role. Like, as much as I disliked the movies, I loved him as that character of Arthur Curry. I loved Henry Cavill as Superman. I loved Ben Affleck as Batman. I thought Gal Gadot, I mean, look, outside of Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot has not succeeded really in anything, but she's great in that character under the right direction. So I think that there was a lot of wins in the terms of casting in the DCEU. And sadly, those actors are going to move on to other roles. We've got our new casting for the new Superman, for the new Lois Lane, for the new Green Lantern. So we're going to see a lot of these characters coming out in this next one. I hope that James Gunn tones down his love of these obscure characters. But, you know, he's got Nathan Fillion playing like the original Green Lantern. It's not even Hal Jordan, the most known Green Lantern. So I think, folks, we're going to be in for a lot of very obscure comic book characters. But you know what? He did it with the Guardians of the Galaxy and he did it well. So I wish him the best of luck. I will be there on opening night to see the launch of the new DC universe. And I do say a fond farewell to the DCEU. Wrapping up Aquaman the way that you did seems fitting.
Can I ask Benny a question?
Absolutely.
Aquaman Lost Kingdom or Expendables 4?
Aquaman Lost Kingdom 7 days a week and twice on Sunday before Expendables 4.
Okay. I need to see where I landed on you that in the Mike Spendables meter. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, folks, we do wish you a happy new year. That's coming up this weekend. And of course, what we were going to do, or what we are planning on doing next week, is we will release our favorites of 2023. I'm curious, your guys' is the big show. I'm very curious, your guys' favorites of this year. We started this podcast halfway through the year. It's been a hell of a lot of fun. I'm glad we got to do it. I hope we continue to do this in 2024. We thank all of you folks for listening. We appreciate all of you. Have a happy new year. Please be safe. Farewell to the DCEU.
I want to end on a good note. Benny, Expendables 4 or Poor Things?
Oh, Expendable 4 all day yes. long.
There we go.
I will shell out money to buy a 4K of Expendables 4 before I watch that piece of shit again.
All right, now I'm going to end the show.
I can't wait to watch Poor Things. I'm so excited to see this movie now. Just because I want to get both sets of flavor on this and create my own. Yeah, I'm excited for this movie. But anyway, folks, happy new year. Have a good rest of your night.
Good night, everybody.